Statistically, there are more older people in our region than ever before, and their number will continue to grow over the next few years. Are we ready for this? Welcome. We're glad you're part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Hope you had a nice weekend. I spent part of it saying goodbye to a longtime neighbor and friend. They were kind of the grandparents of our neighborhood. They had to move out because he had a stroke a few years ago, and they need a smaller house which is wheelchair accessible and has bathrooms to accommodate his needs. Does this sound familiar to you? It's a scenario which is being played out by thousands in our region. Today, we're going to talk with a few of those in our region who are trying to help the situation now and in the future, and we'd like to get your thoughts. Where you live now, will it suit your needs in a few years? Will you have to move? If so, where are you going to go? And do you take care of parents or grandparents now? Email us your comments, please. We're at tfs@wshu.org, or you can find us on Twitter at FullStoryWSHU. Let's start our program today by talking with Dr. Nancy Peppard. Dr. Peppard is a forensic gerontologist from East Hampton. And Dr. Peppard isn't waiting for others. She's tackling the problem herself and has started the Out East Neighborhood Network. Dr. Peppard, welcome. Thank you for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Ron. Thank you very much for having me.
It's our pleasure. And reading and being on your website and reading everything about you, I walk away from it and I think, boy, you know what it takes? It takes a village nowadays, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
What does the Out East Neighborhood Network do?
The Out East Neighborhood Network is part of a national movement called the Village Movement. And the Village Movement started around 2000 with an area of Boston called Beacon Hill. And they got together and said, as a group of older adults, we need people to help us with transportation. We can no longer drive. We need people to help us with home maintenance. We can't find anybody to come in and change light bulbs in the ceiling, for instance. We need people to take us to medical appointments. We need people to socialize with. And they wanted to be able to come together as a small community within a large city and service the needs that they had amongst themselves. And they named themselves the Beacon Hill Village. At this point, there are over 300 villages across the United States.
Wow.
And we are one of the newest ones on the eastern end of Long Island.
Why did you pick the east end of Long Island?
Well, I grew up here, and I came back in 2000. I was living and working in Hong Kong, and I got that phone call that you dread getting in the middle of the night, that my mother had had a massive heart attack in East Hampton. And my father was 82 and my mother was 80. My father was confused about where to take her in the middle of the night. So instead of calling the ambulance, he drove her to the local fire department. The long story short is she ended up in New York Presbyterian Hospital, thank God for her. And I got the phone call. I flew 18 hours back to New York thinking that if she survived this, I would be here maybe for the summer to care for both of them, and then I could go back to my life. Well, now it's 2019, and I'm still here.
Isn't it funny how these things work? I kind of have been through the same in the last few years, so I can empathize. How many members belong to the Out East Neighborhood Network?
Well, at this point, we don't have any official members. We have people who are getting together to formulate the whole project as it exists out here and customize it to the needs of the eastern end of Long Island. Most people think of the Hamptons as, you know, urban people that come from New York City. We have a lot of resources and so forth. But in fact, on the eastern end of Long Island, all five townships, East Hampton Town, Southampton Town, Riverhead, Southold, and Shelter Island, have just a dearth of services available, and I certainly found that out when I came back here. Luckily for me, I have been a gerontologist for over 40 years, and before that, I was raised by my great-aunt and my grandmother, because both of my parents worked, and I was always around elderly people, so I'm very comfortable in that environment, and I'm very knowledgeable about how to find the services that are needed to keep people in their homes and to allow them to age in place, which is largely what the Village Movement is about. People who do not want to relocate into congregate care being either a nursing home or assisted living. They want to stay in their own home and in their own community.
I know a number of people who have told me over the years, whatever, please make sure I don't end up in a home. Sometimes it's inevitable for the family, for the person with medical needs and so on. But it's the aging in place that makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Does it
the
cost
other thing, as you mentioned in the opening, is that America is quickly becoming old. And the problem with that is the population is also has a dearth of younger people coming up behind it. Many of my peers, I'm 67, have never gotten married or chose to never have children as a couple. And so they don't have a built-in caregiving system behind them, such as me traveling halfway around the world to be with my parents to take care of them. And that's going to be a major, major problem that's growing in all areas of the country. But eastern end of Long Island is largely rural. And most people out here who are younger are not able to afford to live out here like their parents did and are moving away for better jobs and better paying jobs.
I have to tell you, in thinking about the questions for today's program, I didn't even think of that aspect, but I do have a number of friends, a number of women friends who did not have children, and they have said to me the last few years, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Does it cost anything to join the Out East Neighborhood Network? I know you're still putting it together. Is this all nonprofit? Is it driven by volunteers? How does it work?
Well, it is a nonprofit organization, a 501c3. Most of the villages around the country charge around $700. However, there is, especially in Middle America and Cape Cod, for instance, the Outer Banks and places like the Eastern Shore of Maryland, their villages are comprised of maybe 35 to 50 people, so that their annual fees are lower because they don't have the extensive programming that a larger network like ourselves will have. If you look at, for instance, New Haven has a very large network like we are growing right now, and they have six villages under their umbrella agency. And I know that you're probably going to be talking to them later, and they can better explain to you, since they've been in place for a number of years, how that all works out in their area. But out here, we have a growing number of people moving to the East End, and they're coming without family behind them. They're not coming into a family situation, and it's hard to integrate into an existing community of people who may have been here for generation after generation. So while it's pretty to look at, just like Cape Cod and all the other resort areas are, there are no means for people to get to know new people. Mm. And the other thing you may be aware of is most churches in an area used to be the hub of social activity. Well, here and all over the country, churches are basically dying in attendance. Mm. And so they can't even join a local church to get to know new people. So we're creating new avenues for people to become socialized, to not become isolated, because that's the number one killer of older people, the isolation. They become depressed and lonely and don't go out after a while. We're putting together the infrastructure for that, just like the other villages have done, so that people have a place to go. They have friends to talk to. They can have coffee in the morning. They can go to social activities. They can go to art events, most of which they won't go to on their own, or they won't drive to anything where if they go to it and it becomes dark after they get there, they won't drive in the dark home. So, you know, they stop going to these events.
Dr. Peppard, I have to take a break in about a minute and a half, but with that time left, and I hope you could stay with us through the break and talk with Lori Lowell from Home Haven. I have a number of friends who are nearing retirement age, and they have already said to me, you know, when I hit that age, I'm out of here. It's Margaritaville. It's Florida. It's someplace warm. Why not simply do that?
Well, for a lot of people, that is something that they do want to do. We were just talking about the past supervisor here in East Hampton Town, and he's down in Florida fishing, and we get pictures in our local newspapers all the time. But for a lot of people, that's also not an option because they can't afford to relocate, and they really don't know anybody in a new location. It's the same problem of getting to know people and to have a social network of people to do things with. So that becomes a large part of the problem.
Dr. Nancy Peppard is with us, and she's going to be with us for a few more minutes, the founder of the Out East Neighborhood Network. Joining us, as Dr. Peppard was saying a little bit earlier, is going to be Lori Lowell, who is the executive director of Home Haven. So we'll be getting the Connecticut perspective. We're talking about aging today and aging in place and taking a village and everybody helping out and doing what they can to help those maybe who need a little hand every now and then. If you would like to join the conversation, you can email us. We are at tfs@wshu.org. Let's see, on Twitter, we're at FullStoryWSHU. That's how you can tweet us. And if you want to do it the old-fashioned way, since we're talking about age and all that, you can actually call us. The number is 833-CALL-TFS. That's 833-225-5800. 37. A short break. We'll be right back. It's the Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks for being with us today. I want to take just a second to tell you about tomorrow's program, because if you've been following the news over the last week, you know all about the college admissions scandal. What a mess. And the reaction from the American public has just been astounding. And some of the hate messages, if you read it on the websites, I've been taken aback. Tomorrow we're going to have someone explain the college admissions process, what is going on now. We'll also be talking with one of the, what they call the coaches, someone who assists families and students in the application process. And then at the end of it, we're going to be talking with a real college coach to talk about the athletic end of it and how that recruiting goes and how that fits into the college application process. So I think you'll want to tune in tomorrow. It's going to be a fascinating program. Today, we continued talking about aging in place, what needs to be done, what the government is trying to do, or what some people would like the government to do, and what volunteers and others are doing who simply can't wait for the government to get its wheels in motion. And they're saying, you know what, we're going to do it ourselves and we're going to take care of ourselves. Dr. Nancy Peppard is with us. She is the founder of the Out East Neighborhood Network. And joining us also is Lori Lowell, the executive director of Home Haven. Hi, Lori. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm very happy to be on the show.
Thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with us today. We appreciate it. It sounds, from what you're doing at Home Haven, very similar to what Dr. Peppard is doing on the East End.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I was listening to her remarks, and I think one of the big differences that I would point out is that we are an urban area predominantly, although our members live also in some of the more rural, I would say, suburban towns that surround New Haven. So we have a very mixed membership of urban neighborhoods, people living close together, walking to activities, walking to each other's homes. But we also have some people who live at more of a distance and live on, 1 or 2 acre properties and have different needs in those areas. So, you know, we're kind of different, I think, than the way she described the East End of Long Island.
So you're in the New Haven area. What communities do you serve?
Okay, we're an unusual structure, actually. We have 6 villages within the entire organization of Home Haven. And those are the founding village, which was the East Rock neighborhood of New Haven, which was a beautiful walking neighborhood of homes and small apartment buildings all clustered together around the Yale University area. And we have two other villages within the city of New Haven in two other neighborhoods. One is called Downtown, and that's where it is. And the other one is the Westville neighborhood. And those are, again, urban walking neighborhoods. And we have a large village in Hamden, which is a town just to the north of New Haven. And that is a combination of kind of older suburban, you know, houses on lots. Some people are walking into a little village area. Other people are kind of, you know, driving from their homes to various locations that they would be visiting. We also have members in an area called North Haven, which is another town.
Mm-hmm.
And then our sixth village is unusual in that it is called Amity, and it involves members from three large suburban towns. And it covers almost 30 square miles. And those towns are Woodbridge, Bethany, and Orange.
Now, when we're talking about villages, so we can clarify it a little bit, it's not as if these villages are incorporated. It's a term you use for networking, if you will.
That's right. They are virtual villages, and we try to make that very clear when we talk to people about joining Home Haven. We say that we use the term village because we're talking about the kind of connections among people that existed in the old-fashioned villages of the last couple of hundred years, and the kind of connection to each other, the relationships, the commitment, the concern that doesn't really exist even in neighborhoods where you have people living in very close proximity. And it doesn't exist mostly because people have been working and raising their children and living their lives, and then as the children grow up and move on, you have older adults now living in individual homes or apartments and really not interacting within the neighborhood very much.
Mm.
So we provide a structure within which that happens, and it's very, very successful. And we coordinate it through our office, which is the hub of the hub and spoke system. And by the way, Home Haven actually founded the hub and spoke structure for the village movement. So the office provides that coordinating central focus, but our villages are run by village leaders. Every village has two village leaders, and those people are really responsible for enhancing the communication and the some of the local activities, decentralized activities that take place in those village neighborhoods. And then we also have activities that we run for the entire organization. We have 225 members, and our villages range from about 30 members to about 65 members in each village. And you know, if you add all that together, that's how you get to our total number. And various activities are run, some locally and some by the office, when it comes to driving and giving rides, which is something that Dr. Peppard mentioned. We find it's best if our members volunteer and help each other in the locality that they live in, because then it becomes neighbor helping neighbor.
It's a community,
then.
They know
where each other lives, you know, right. And they can reach out and give someone a ride, you know, to a doctor's appointment or to an activity.
I want to bring Dr. Peppard back in for a moment here. Lori, just stay with us. Dr.
Yes.
Peppard, I think I read in one of your reports, possibly, that the number one need is transportation?
Especially out here on the east end of Long Island, yes. The bus systems do not connect. So if you're leaving one town, such as East Hampton, and you want to go to Riverhead, it's very difficult to get connecting buses that are the public buses to get from where you want to go to where you want to end up. And you're also talking about people who have just given up their cars, mm-hmm. and are totally unaware of how the bus system works because they've never used the public bus system before.
Lori, do many of your members still drive, or do they rely on public transportation or someone else possibly driving them?
Oh, Well, I would say that many members still drive, but one of the issues that we talk about a lot is what it feels like and what the reality is when you transition from driving to not driving. Sometimes a member will voluntarily stop driving because they say, I just don't feel comfortable anymore, it's not working out. And other times there may be a medical situation or an accident or a condition that that leads that person to say, you know what, I wish I could drive, but I can see that that's really not possible for me anymore. And sometimes it's temporary, and sometimes it becomes a permanent situation. And then either they rely on their friends, or more likely they call Home Haven, and we put out a notice to our drivers. We have vetted drivers who are other members who drive, and they will take those people to their appointments. And then finally, some people do rely on public transportation, but as is the case on the east end of Long Island, our members are not accustomed to getting around that way. It's not particularly reliable or convenient. It's very inconvenient if you're carrying parcels, and it's pretty awful if you happen to have a walker or a cane or some other situation. So we try to help out that way.
A little bit of everything.
I personally do believe that transportation is one of the issues that we're going to need government services to help with.
One of these days, we're going to have to do a full program on when some people should simply say, enough is enough. I shouldn't be driving anymore. The same way I feel about some young kids, they should not be driving. But that's a completely separate program. Dr. Peppard, I have to ask you a question. Why are you doing this? Why isn't the government doing this? Why is it taking volunteers and others when possibly the tax dollars that are being spent should be going to help seniors and retirees and the elderly?
Well, in all fairness, the government does provide good and valuable services to the communities out here on the East End. We have senior nutrition sites that are well attended by people. We have transportation that is provided through each one of the townships. And we have a Suffolk County service, transportation service, that you have to sign up for, but they will take you anywhere within Suffolk County. So if, for instance, you live in East Hampton, which is pretty far out on the East End, and you have to go into, say, Centerport, which is on the north shore of Long Island and pretty far from here, it's probably 75 to 80 miles from here, because that's where your old doctor used to be and you've just moved out here and you want to go back and see him, but you don't feel comfortable going on the Long Island Expressway. You can have that Suffolk County service pick you up at your home with a caregiver, if you have one, and bring you to that location and bring you home again. However, I have just gotten out of the hospital myself. I just had a knee replacement surgery 2 weeks ago. And I have tried to use the service myself and found it to be so frustrating and inflexible that I just said, forget it. I'm getting in the car and driving myself.
Oh, you did?
I did. But then I tend to be a little bit stubborn.
but very honest.
That's true, too. And a lot of people who move here from someplace else have never had to use a county service before, wherever they've come from. Some of them have come from New York City. Some of them have come from Nassau County. They come out here, and they're very unaccustomed to the kind of services that the county and the towns provide on the east end of Long Island. I have nothing against those services. They're very well done, and they provide a very great service to the people who uses them. However, there is a distinction between the person who is very active, is still driving, who is intellectually curious, who wants to be a lifetime learner, and the kind of people that they want to associate with. And so in my experience and in what we're setting up here, and I'm sure Lori has set up in Connecticut, we set up programs where people can go to art museums, for instance, that are quite far away, that a senior may not be comfortable driving to, even though they are driving.
Mm.
We have programs that are designed to go into New York City, which is only 100 miles away from here. But most people won't get on the jitney, the Hampton jitney, to go into the city because they're scared now. As they leave the city, they get more and more frightened of going back into the city with all the news that comes out every single night about them, you know, older people getting attacked in the city. So the county services and the town services serve a tremendous need, but we serve an alternative need. And I think Lori can tell you that that's probably what she does as well.
And it's interesting, you note that about the city. In the meantime, the city is the safest it's been probably in my generation. So
that's true.
Lori, I have to ask you a question about the demographic makeup of Connecticut. I'm not going to ask you to comment on the island, even though they're somewhat familiar. I know on the AARP site, I believe it said that retirees currently make up around 37% of Connecticut, and that number is going to grow in the next few years.
Mm-hmm.
Are the state officials ready for this?
You know what? I don't think anyone is ready for this, and I think that that generation that's coming along, which is my generation, the baby boomers, we're not ready for it. I think one of the things that is going to be happening is that the current service system is going to be swamped by an incoming demographic of people that expect very high level of service, very high level of individuality in what they receive, that are used to having input into the services that are provided. I mean, this is a generation. First of all, it's a big generation. We know it's a boom, and it continues to overwhelm as we've been aging along, we have overwhelmed the expectations of the providers around us, and that's going to happen. And I think that one of the things we're doing in Home Haven is we're trying to think very creatively about the generation that's coming along and what the needs are going to be, and we're trying to get ahead of that curve. We don't want to be in a position where members are coming in with new ideas and new needs, and we're not ready to support that and to provide those needs to them. So we are thinking a lot about what we should be doing over the next 5 to 10 years. We're actually about to celebrate our 10th year anniversary in 2020. That's a wonderful thing, but it also is a time to take stock and say, what do we need to do to be flexible and to continue growing? And I think what one of the things that Dr. Peppert said, which is very true here, is that more than ever, older people's adult children are not available to provide the kind of support and help with decision-making, for example, that the older generation is accustomed to having. You know, we helped our parents and grandparents, but I don't think our children are necessarily going to be in the same region to be of that assistance. So we're, as an organization, Home Haven, is trying to help our members to put a planning process into place so that they are ready for what's coming down the road. Because aging does make one more vulnerable.
Absolutely. And
Dr.
Peppert,
that can't be anticipated.
What Lori is saying is so difficult, isn't it? I mean, just trying to get someone to put a will together and to say, you know what, I'm mortal and I have to start planning for the future. Just doing that is like pulling teeth.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be worse.
Well, you look at somebody like Aretha Franklin. She's $80 million strong and dies without a will.
I didn't realize she didn't have a will. Okay, I didn't read that.
No will.
Wow.
And there are many people who have a tremendous amount of wealth, and they are not putting together a will or trusts or anything to make it an easy transition once they pass away to divide up their assets and their money. The other thing that people don't take into consideration is baby boomers are the Kramer versus Kramer generation. We're the generation to divorce at the drop of a hat. And our children behind us are used to having different step parents, people that, you know, were introduced to them maybe when they were three, and then another group of people who became their father or mother when they were seven, and that, you know, that kind of transition in their lives. And you can't expect them to have an affinity to take care of somebody as they continue to decline, when in fact the adults in their life couldn't stay together in the good years.
It's funny you say that, and I just think of Dustin Hoffman now saying, "Dad's got to work. Dad's got to bring home the bacon." I think we're pretty much all in the same generation here. Dr. Nancy Peppert is with us, the founder of the Out East Neighborhood Network, and Lori Lowell is the executive director of Home Haven. We're talking about aging in place and the graying of our region. Coming up, we're going to be speaking with representatives from AARP in New York and Connecticut to see what's happening in Albany and in Hartford. We would love to hear from you. You could email us, tfs@wshu.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. Stay with us. We'll be right back. It's the full story on WSHU. We're glad you're part of the program today. Thank you for joining us. Lori Lowell is with us, the executive director of Home Haven. It's in the New Haven area. Dr. Nancy Peppert is the founder of the Out East Neighborhood Network. And we're going to get the perspective now of aging and seniors and retirees and what's being done in Albany and Hartford. Kristen McManus is with us, the senior program specialist with AARP New York. And Anadora Ghazi, Associate State Director for Advocacy and Outreach for AARP Connecticut. Anna, Kristen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Anna, I just want to start with you. You have, and it was shown in the recent midterm elections, a pretty powerful voting block here in Connecticut. Are state legislators, is the governor paying attention?
I believe they are. Something that we've seen kind of going into the elections where we saw excellent turnout from the 50-plus voters, which is something we see in every election, is that state representatives listen to us. They return our calls, certainly as AARP Connecticut. When we call, they're interested in meeting with our members and discussing the issues that matter most to them. And I think, in part, we see some of that interest reflected in the governor's budget this year. We're seeing great support for initiatives that AARP Connecticut supports, like paid family and medical leave, and we see a good continued commitment to home and community-based services that help people stay in their homes as they age. We do have some concerns, but, in a difficult budget year, we're looking at a budget that we think does reflect some of the concerns that we've been presenting to the governor and to legislators.
What would be your biggest concern?
I think we have two big concerns with the budget that Governor Lamont put out. One is that starting this year, Social Security, pension, and annuity income was supposed to be exempted from income tax in Connecticut. And under Governor Lamont's budget, this exemption would be repealed. We're concerned about this because there are retirees out there who made financial decisions based on the promise of relief from having to pay income taxes on these forms of retirement income. So we're very concerned about that. We're concerned about folks who are now having to rethink what their retirement could look like. We're also concerned that the governor's budget would impose something called an asset test on a program called the Medicare Savings Program. Medicare Savings Program helps Medicare enrollees pay for their Medicare Part B premiums, which is the medical insurance that covers your doctor's visits, outpatient care. There's also a related program called the Low Income Subsidy that helps people pay for their prescription drug prices. So under the governor's budget, anyone who has assets that exceed a pretty low threshold, it's around $7,500 for singles and a little over $11,000 for couples. If you have more than that in the bank, you would lose your eligibility for the Medicare Savings Program.
Mm.
That would mean about 18,000 seniors would be kind of booted off of the program.
Wow. And those aren't very high numbers.
No, they're not, especially in a state like Connecticut where we have a high cost of living, where we have some of the highest property taxes and some of the highest rents, some of the highest utility costs. And we know prescription medication in particular is a huge expense for seniors and for folks on a fixed income who maybe have enough money in the bank for you know, a new car, if they're a new used car, I should say, if their car breaks down or for pretty basic home repairs, we want to make sure that people have the ability to kind of meet those basic needs, and that having just that little bit of cash on hand doesn't mean that you're not going to be able to take advantage of benefits that we know are really working and really helping a lot of people.
Kristen McManus, what's the view from New York? How do you think the Cuomo administration is handling the situation in terms of retirees and the elderly in New York?
You know, I think that this is one of the first years in a while that we have seen a governor who really recognizes the reality that our population is growing older, and the older population is going to need a little bit of help to be able to stay at home. We recently commissioned some research from the Center for an Urban Future, and they took a look at the demographic trends in New York State over the past 10 years, looking at census data. So now in New York State, we have seen an increase in the 65-plus population by 26%. There are now more New Yorkers over the age of 65 than there are children under the age of 13. We saw a huge population increase in Suffolk County in the 65-plus. And we think the governor's budget now recognizes this reality. We haven't seen an investment in the state office for the aging to administer home and community-based services since Governor Pataki was in office. And these are just simple services like somebody, you know, home-delivered meals, somebody to come by and assist with housekeeping, some bathing and dressing, and activities like that. The governor in his executive budget has included $15 million for these services, which is really huge, and we're very pleased to see that.
Is it enough, though? Is $15 million enough?
Well, honestly, no. We think that the number needs to be $25 million. We would love to see an additional $10 million added to that. But we've also found in our research that comparing now to the year 2000, the State Office for the Aging is spending 40% less per older adult than they were almost 20 years ago. So we really need to make sure that we are meeting the need and providing enough resources to these older adults to help them stay at home.
So the population is growing for the elderly, the seniors, and at the same time, the numbers are going down.
Yeah, exactly. So we really need, you know, we need this $15 million investment. We need to build on that investment, make sure that people have these services.
Before I bring Dr. Peppard and Lori Lowell back into the conversation, talk to me about family caregivers.
Sure. So these are family members who are helping their older loved ones stay at home. You know, my grandmother actually lives out on Long Island, and whenever I come to visit, I help her, you know, go to the pharmacy and get her medication. I help her do her grocery shopping. I help take out her trash, help her with her laundry. It's simple things like this, family members who are able to help their older loved ones with just some of those little activities that they might not be able to do on their own and help them stay at home. So we have 2.6 million family caregivers in the state of New York. And if we were able to put a dollar amount on the care that they provide, it would be $32 billion. And they're doing this for free as a labor of love to help out their family members. So we are always looking for ways to help these family caregivers. We know that burnout is a particular concern of theirs. That's one of the reasons that we're fighting for these home and community-based services in the budget. We know, you know, if you have one meal delivered to your loved one, that's one less meal that you have to cook, one less thing that you have to do. But we also know that for family caregivers, it is a huge financial burden. Nationally, the average family caregiver spends around $7,000 out of pocket annually to help keep their older loved ones at home. And if you are caring for somebody from a further away distance, a long-distance caregiver, or if you're caring for somebody who has dementia, those numbers can go up to around over $11,000 a year. So another thing that we have been working on is trying to implement a tax credit for family caregivers. And for some of those qualified expenses, like help with transportation to and from the doctor or medication or home health aid costs that wouldn't be covered by insurance or Medicare or Medicaid, find a way to reimburse them through their taxes for around $3,500 to take away some of that financial burden.
Anna Doragazi is with Connecticut AARP. Anna, are those numbers similar for Connecticut? And I also want, if you can address the fact that many family caregivers, not only are they giving their time and their love and their money, but sometimes they also have to quit their jobs to care for others, for their loved ones.
Right. So we have similar, I guess proportionately similar numbers. New York's a much bigger state than Connecticut. In Connecticut, we're looking at around 459,000 family caregivers who are providing what we estimate to be just under $6 billion worth of free care every year. And, you know, you mentioned the impact sort of personally, emotionally, but there's also that workplace impact. 60% of caregivers are employed at the same time that they're providing care. And that turns into a big juggling act, especially at times when somebody's in kind of an acute health crisis and might have more doctor's appointments, or they're in a time, you know, right after surgery or something where they're needing more sort of round-the-clock care. And that's one of the reasons that AARP Connecticut is working to get a paid family and medical leave policy passed in Connecticut this year. It was something that was supported in the governor's budget. We've seen proposals from both the House and the Senate that would put in place a paid family and medical leave policy where workers would have up to 12 weeks available to take time off to care for a loved one. And we think this is so important because what we know and what we've seen is that in the absence of having family caregivers available, a lot of people end up going into nursing homes or other institutional settings where they're not in their community anymore. They're not in the homes where, you know, they've raised their families or they've spent their lives, the homes where they want to be. And those nursing homes and those institutions can be really good, really necessary support. But they're also much, much more expensive. Mm. In Connecticut in particular, we have some of the most expensive nursing home costs in the entire country. And Medicaid ends up being the primary payer for a lot of people for those nursing home services. So we can make small investments that keep people in their homes and that make it easier for family caregivers to provide care in those home settings. Or we can pay a much higher cost, you know, to say nothing of the sort of a emotional cost of having to put a loved one
right
into some kind of nursing home. It just, the cost to the taxpayer ends up being really tremendous that way.
I'm just tight on time, so I'd like to bring back in Lori Lowell and Dr. Nancy Pepper. Lori is the executive director of Home Haven. Lori, I'm assuming, and I shouldn't do that, that everything you've been hearing from Kristen and Anna is no surprise to you.
No, it's not. And I think that one of the things that we provide through our volunteers, who are actually our own members, is we provide the kinds of assistance, some of the assistance that your AARP guests are talking about. Although our Home Haven member volunteers do not go into a home and you know, do actual professional caregiving. You know, they don't do that. But they do provide some of the social contacts, some of the assistance, sometimes providing meals, sometimes, you know, as I said earlier, talking about rides and transportation. I think that, you know, we're talking about the same kinds of situations, although our membership tend not to have their family members available to do that kind of helping. So we try to provide, you know, we try to fill that gap to some degree.
Doctor,
and it's not a perfect system. I wouldn't say that we can do that 100%. We know that we cannot.
Dr. Nancy Peppert is the founder of the Out East Neighborhood Network. Doctor, I also want to give you a chance just to, not to respond, but to comment on everything that you heard from Kristen and Anna.
Well, I agree, obviously, with what they're saying, because the evidence is showing up in people's homes, especially if you, like I do, visit a lot of elderly people in their homes outside of what I do professionally. Their homes are basically falling apart around them because they don't have the financial resources to add a ramp onto their house, which makes them isolated from being able to leave their home. They don't have the financial resources to repair things in their homes, which leads sometimes to fires in their homes in the wintertime. There's all kinds of problems that go unnoticed by the larger community that AARP does answer the call for. I have to say that I went to graduate school at the Ethel Percy Andrus Gerontology School at the University of Southern California. Ethel Percy Andrus was the founder of AARP. So wow. I have an affinity for AARP, shall I say.
I have just 3 minutes left in the program, and I'd like to give each of you a chance just to talk about what you would like to see happen in your communities, in your networks, and also in Albany and Hartford. Anna Duragazi, I'd like to start with you. Let's get the AARP Connecticut perspective.
You know, I think the bottom line of what we're trying to do in our advocacy, whether it's in communities or whether it's at our legislative office building, we really want older residents to be valued and to be respected and to be able to live in a state and in communities where who they are is valued and seen as, you know, not a drain on the economy, not a drain on our society, but having older people in your community is something that can be celebrated and that can be facilitated through policy decisions and how we treat each other.
That little touch of gray isn't bad sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
Kristen McManus, who's the Senior Program Specialist with AARP New York, what would you like to see, please?
Well, I would agree with everything that Anna has said. You know, we think that we need to build inclusive communities that allow for people of all ages. The fact that we're growing older and living longer is a huge public health victory, but we really need to make sure that we are prepared to be able to handle that growing population. And I would just ask, you know, we are so close in the state budget to getting the investment that we closer than we've been before to getting the investment that we need, that if your listeners want to call their legislators, they can at 844-567-7806 and tell them to fund home and community-based services for older adults.
And the number we've been talking about is $15 million. And if you had your druthers, you would like that to go up to $25
million. $25 million. In a perfect world.
In a perfect world. Lori Lowell is the executive director of Home Haven. Lori, what would you like to see happen, and how can people get more information about your services?
Well, I just want to say quickly that I think that we're very fortunate to have AARP as our partners doing the kind of work that they're doing in lobbying and education. So I want you both to know that we appreciate everything you do in our state and in New York. If anyone wants to get in touch with us at Home Haven, we would love to hear from you and answer questions. We are building membership. We have room to grow. Our phone number is 203-776-7378. We also have a website, homehavenvillages.com. And, of course, I have to check and make sure it's dot. No, it's .org. Excuse me. homehavenvillages.org. And you can also email us at info@homehavenvillages.org. And I just want to emphasize the relationships that we build among people. I think that this is one of the most powerful things that we do. And not only do the people benefit who receive the services, but members who volunteer and give to others benefit so much from feeling that they're of service and that they're contributing.
Dr. Nancy, so I'm sorry, Larry, I have to hold you there because Dr. Peppard gets the last 25 seconds. Doctor?
Well, I would like to recommend that people look up our website as well. It's outeastneighborhoodnetwork.org. That's all one word. And you can get all of our contact information there. You can text me or call me and volunteer to work with us as we build this to meet the needs of the people on the eastern end of Long Island.
Dr.
And
Nancy
Peppard. I welcome you.
Dr. Nancy Peppard, Lori Lowell, Kristen McManus, Anna Duragazi, thank you all. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron. It was a pleasure.
That's it for our show today. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Carrie Frank, digital editor. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan, our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of the full story.